We're going to go ahead and go to the next speaker, but I very much encourage you to speak with Dr. Sun on your own time to ask her questions about her study.
That's fine, yes.
So next we'll have Dr. Shetty, who comes from the University of Southampton in the UK, and will be talking about a various number of studies.
Thank you very much. I think the potential and the excitement of the data from longitudinal studies is fascinating. But I'd like to bring you down to earth, because one of the serious problems we have is WHO claims there are between 300 million to 400 million obese, pretty close to 1 billion overweight people, but we don't know where the data comes from, because there are serious problems and limitations about the data. Many of the data that have gone into these large global databases are not nationally representative. A large proportion of the data are also self-reported data, and we know that one of the problems with obesity is self-reporting tends to generally underestimate rather than overestimate the problem. So we have a serious problem there. WHO has been trying to create a global database on BMI. We had a meeting in December of 2007, the report of which is still awaited. And if you visit the WHO Global Database website, you will see only the first two sections on the methodology bit of it, but the rest of it, which actually should have the data, is not yet populated. It's just blank. So clearly, we have real problems about obtaining good data from different countries. The one organization that seems to generate a lot of this data is the International Obesity Task Force and the International Association for the Study of Obesity, which are closely linked, because IOTF actually belongs to ISO. The other organization that also produces data fairly frequently on global problem of obesity is the Standing Committee on Nutrition, which produces its World Nutrition Situation report. The last one was 2004. The next report is due in 2009. I'm not sure it'll come out by the end of this year, but it'll certainly come out next year, and that will also have data. But that, again, is a bit circular, because the data that the ISO generates and the data that the SEN uses are more or less the same data set. So clearly, we are looking at more or less similar data sets. So that's one problem that I want to highlight to you before I tell you something about the available data on the prevalence and trends, both in developed and developing countries. Don't worry about this very busy slide. It just shows that the problem of obesity is fairly serious in developed countries. And in fact, countries like the USA, we don't even have the latest data, and the latest data shows that it, in males, for instance, it's more than 33%. But I think this is an important slide, because we need to look at it not from the point of view of what is happening to countries where the problem is increasing, but what is happening in those countries where the problem is very low. For instance, why is Netherlands having a low prevalence of obesity at about 6% or so? Why are equally industrialized, economically developed countries in Asia, Japan, Korea, having lower levels of obesity? And I think our focus should also equally move towards trying to examine situations in countries which have developed and yet have been able to keep the problem of obesity and overweight much lower than in other countries. And I think this is where we need to focus a little more attention. If you look at the problem of overweight and obesity in the rest of the world, in countries in the African region, countries in Asia, and so on, here I've actually summarized the data, again, from the world, the SEN report, as well as updated from the IOTF. IOTF has got a very good website. I urge you to visit them, and you have a lot of the data on the IOTF website. Now, we have a problem in some parts of Africa, particularly in North Africa, in Morocco. We have a problem in South Africa. These are countries where the problem of both overweight and obesity is quite high. If you look at Asia, there are several countries which have are beginning to show problems, particularly with regard to overweight. And you will notice that this data from Thailand is the only part of the developed Asian country where you have a very high percentage of obese, whereas most of the other parts of Asia, and in particular South Asia, have very low levels of obesity. Latin America has big problems. You notice that parts of Latin America, Peru, Uruguay, 50% of people are overweight, and obesity is anything between 15 to 25%. And we consider 15 to 30% as being a serious problem of obesity. So clearly, Latin America has got problems. You must also remember that Latin America, compared to the rest of the world, is highly urbanized. We are moving towards a world where 80% of the population will be urbanized. We've just crossed the 50% limit. But Latin America has already been 80% urbanized for several decades now. So clearly, that may be an important aspect to consider. Middle East, which has been flush with dollars, very rich, lifestyles have dramatically changed. We have serious problem of obesity. Again, you can see that both the proportion of obesity, in this case we are looking at just prevalence of obesity in males and females, BMI greater than 30. And you can see some parts, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Bahrain have got serious problems. And I know that the data in Bahrain and Kuwait and Saudi Arabia is very good, reliable, nationally representative data. This is a part of the world where we have the most serious problem of obesity. This is the small island countries and countries in Polynesia and Oceania, where the problem of obesity goes up to virtually 70% in some parts. I think in Nauru it was 80% in the 2004 survey. It actually dropped to about 55%. So it's likely that the earlier data was not representative of the problem in that country. I'm just going to show you some quick data, again from IOTF, from obesity in children. If you visit the IOTF website, you will see data both for men, boys and girls, pre-adolescent and post-adolescent, but I'm just showing you for boys, not because I prefer boys, but because it was easier to show the data. If you look at the problem with boys, you notice that Spain is the major country with problems. Spain and England are right on the top. If you look at girls of pre-adolescent period, you notice Spain is not on the top. It's Greece and Portugal that's on the top. And if you compare pre-adolescent with post-adolescent, you notice that the problem is much more among a pre-adolescent, that is in the young children, 7 to 11 years, compared to the more older children, the adolescent children. This is adolescent children, boys. Again, we have similar pictures for both girls, and as I mentioned, if you visit the IOTF website, you can see this data. You can see trends. Again, this is from the ISO-IOTF website. If you look at that, you can see the global prevalence. Pattern in prior to 1990. You'll notice that Canada is tippled. That means it's self-reported data. So you can see in the 1990s, large proportion of the data from Canada was entirely self-reported. What happened between 1990 and 1999? The pattern changed in Canada and in the US, and you notice that between 2000 and 2006, it changed even more dramatically. Again, if you visit the IOTF website, you can see this for boys, for girls, and also for adults. Overweight and obesity in adult. In the European 27 countries, the data for that is also available in the website, and this is the summary of the data, both for overweight and obese, for males and females. Age stratified data is also available on this website. This is the prevalence of adult obesity in Europe and the trends, 85 to 89, 90 to 94, moving on, the colors become darker and darker, 95 to 99, 2000 to 2008. And you can see there is an increasing trend towards both increase in overweight and obesity in Europe at the same time. I was also asked by Laurette to talk about nutrition transition because that's a related problem. And here I refer to a fairly major study carried out by six independent countries where the people in the country were involved in producing these data. And it was put together by the Food and Agricultural Organization, trying to look at the problem of both nutrition transition and the double burden of malnutrition, because in many developing countries, parts were acquiring features of overweight and obesity, where parts were continuing to have the problem of undernutrition and underweight. The six countries we chose, naturally, were China, India, Egypt, Mexico, Philippines, and South Africa. And the entire document is available on the website in the document repository. These are the economic and health social indicators of those countries. You can see that the proportion of urbanized is quite varied, quite low in India, 28%, compared to Mexico and Philippines, where it was 75 and 60%. You can also see the variation in the infant mortality rate, but the life expectancy was more or less similar. There were increasing trends. If you look at the dietary intake, for instance, I've categorized it so that we look at data from earlier periods, 1980s, 1990s, and 2000. And you can see that in general, the proportion of fat contributing to dietary energy has gone up in all these countries. Even in India, it moved from 1979 to 14% in 2001. So clearly there is an indication that as these countries are economically developing, the proportion of energy from fat is changing. You can also see the sort of trends we saw in the UK from 1940 onwards. If you look at the consumption of carbohydrates and fats, you can see that carbohydrate consumption drops and fat intake goes up. Similar trends are beginning to be observed in all these countries. You can see that what were considered to be healthy components of the diet are decreasing, whereas what are considered to be not so healthy components of the diet are beginning to increase. So there are these phases of nutrition transition taking place in these various countries. Childhood undernutrition is clearly coming down. Whether it's underweight or stunting, you can see that over a period of time, it has dropped in all the countries. In India, for instance, it dropped from 61.2 in the 91-92 to 45 in the 98-99 database. I know that more recent data shows a slightly more disturbing changes. This final slide actually looks at what is happening to women, because most of this data comes from the World Bank funded measurements, mostly done in women and children. And you can actually see that if you look at decadal changes over a decade in women, you notice that underweight is reducing, overweight is actually going up. The only exception to that is Mexico. We don't actually count too much on the data from South Africa, because South Africa is a very peculiar situation. When we looked at the data, we discovered that their awareness and data on undernutrition was very poor. Much of the data was obtained from urban centers, mostly from white populations, and clearly they had very poor handle on what was happening in the rest of the country. And I think part of the reason why we are seeing this phenomenal increase in underweight is because when measurements were made subsequently, they were more representative of the population of South Africa, and clearly it appeared as though they had a phenomenal increase in underweight in these countries. Again, that is part of the historical problem, and so it truly does not represent what is happening in this country. Thank you very much.
Any questions?
I just want to know that if you take BMI, there are papers already shown BMI in case of Southeast Asian people, BMI is totally different. So if you take cutoff of 30 in urban population, say in Delhi also, you will find negligible amount of so-called obese. Another thing is like that in India specifically, most of the data are urban. So can you shed some light? Because
if you're looking at BMI and the risk of associated comorbidities, cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes, Clearly, I think South Asians have a peculiar problem in the sense that it appears as though at a lower BMI of about 22.5 or so, the risk of both type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease begins to increase. There was a consultation organized by WHO in Singapore to actually derive cutoffs for Asians for flagging up when people begin to enter the range of risk. And they recommended at that stage that it should be lower than 25 and should come down to 22.5 or 23. This was subsequently followed up by a meeting which was held last December in 2008 in WHO on trying to look at this whole issue of waist circumference, waist height ratio, and BMI on risk. Unfortunately, this meeting was not clearly conclusive that we need to derive these much lower cutoffs. Although the indications are there, the evidence is not so strong. So I think they are now suggesting that we look at the evidence more clearly, maybe design studies to examine this more clearly before we actually arrive at very specific cutoff points. Nevertheless, I think it's important to remember that there is no doubt that there is increased risk among South Asians, and therefore 25 may be not the acceptable cutoff, although what it is at the lower end, we are still not able to state.
I am Dr. Kapil from India. So when you talk about nutrition transition, do we have any scientifically valid indicators that this country is going into the rapid or mild, moderate, or severe degree of nutrition transition? What's the pace of nutrition transition if we want to measure for a country or a community?
I think that's a million-dollar question, actually, because we've been struggling to try and put together what is it that we know that nutrition transition is a transition associated with the development. When we talk about development, we talk about developmental transition that is associated with the change in demography, because when the demographic changes and life expectancy goes up, we have more adults, and therefore people will die of chronic diseases, because as you grow old, you die of chronic diseases. So it's not necessarily, it's completely related to chronic diseases, but we know that premature mortality increases, and that's what we are concerned about. We also know there is an epidemiological transition, that deaths due to communicable diseases is replaced by non-communicable diseases, because infant mortality rate is what contributes to much to reducing life expectancy. And then we have part of this, the whole phenomenon of urbanization taking place. So what is the indicator we need to use? If you're looking for one indicator or a suite of indicators, I don't think we are anywhere close to that. But if you're looking at it from a dietary context, clearly it would appear as though the increase in consumption of fat as energy seems to be one indicator, but I wouldn't be confident in saying that is the indicator of nutrition transition. I don't know whether that answers your question. The question you're asking is very difficult to answer.
No, sir, I'm just asking about, suppose we take a cohort and we talk about that, okay, next 10 years there's a nutrition transition has taken place and which has led to the increase in, say, increase in metabolic disorders or risk of metabolic indicators have increased. How do we actually correlate this with this?
You have to remember what Laurette started out with. She showed you this beautiful figure that came from the Foresight Report, 2007, produced by the government, UK government. And that, it just shows that even if you're talking about just the problem of obesity, and we used to believe 30 years ago that obesity was just a question of imbalance between intake and expenditure. Total energy intake and total expenditure. And if you look at this spaghetti diagram, you notice that the gas is just in one part, and the rest of it is so complicated. I think the same thing applies to nutrition transition. In fact, there may be other variables that we have not taken into consideration when we looked at this figure. And I think that systems approach is perhaps the probable approach we need to make towards trying to understand what are the multiple factors that we put together when we say nutrition transition is taking place. I know I'm not giving you a satisfactory answer because I don't know the answer.
Perhaps on that note, we could go ahead and break. We're running a bit behind, but let's see, it's, oh yes, thank you, sorry. So, about 10 minutes if we could come back, so that's about 10:10.
Going for.
We have an hour and a half after for discussion.
Do we? Okay, good. Yeah, excellent.